Morning, Mac. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're here at Cooper's Pub North in Mays Chapel. They call it Cooper's North. We're here in the plaza in beautiful Timonium. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. It is a cup of soup or bowl. We have lots of bags for the Maryland Food Bank. People bringing canned goods up here, doing the right thing and participating and helping us out. Also, our friends at Wise Markets have been involved in this. This is a little bit of a homegrown segment. Luke Jones joins me now. It's really hard to get him down into the city because he does 81 baseball games and he's doing football games and out to Owings Mills. But Luke lives across the border in Pennsylvania. And when I said Timonium, he's like, it's not that far.
Yeah. So 30 minutes.
30?
Is it right down 83? Sure,
30?
Sure.
I don't know, but right off 83, absolutely.
You know, I was thinking on my way here, it is so rare when you and I are actually physically together.
We are Bernie.
It's so funny.
Bernie Taupin and Elton John.
I was thinking about it. I was just like,
when were we in a room together?
When?
Pizza Johns.
Yeah, which was the end of baseball season. I mean, that was October.
People listen to us every single day, and they're like, you and Luke must hang out together a lot. I'm like, I don't know. I'm breathing the same air with
them. I mean, we Zoom so often, so it feels like we spend more time together.
This is the part where you really admit that you're glad I don't have a media credential, because I'd be sitting next to you bugging you like you're crazy.
Well, you know,
you hate me working next to you.
I just bury my head in my laptop.
And I hate myself when I'm next to you.
It's all good.
Because I'm funny and I'm glib, and I don't take any of it seriously, because I just...
Well, that was always preseason football games. I mean, that was the shtick. To the point where people would look at it and be like, really?
What are we doing here? My new shtick this week. Welcome back. We're WNST. Today, on today's program, we're going to take a hard look at the impact of this year's Pro Bowl. Because this is the week we always do that. You know, I think I said to you earlier this week, if I put a headline up that said, Luke and Nestor break down the Pro Bowl, would anyone click on it?
No, it would be literally, let's tear it down. Break it down so it doesn't exist anymore.
We've done that. I mean, look, we did probably 15 Super Bowls together before they started throwing me out all these years of doing this. And we did football and all that. It's baseball. By the time people hear this, there will be either a new Super Bowl champion or an old Super Bowl champion. The Orioles are trying, this is their time now, right?
Yeah.
Justin Tucker is going to have his name run through the mud every day, and the Ravens are going to have to deal with free agency. The Ravens aren't going to get better this offseason. They're not going to make some splash signing of a player that you're going to say, well, that they're going to win. They better win the Super Bowl with the guys they have. Now, the Orioles, we're still at a point where there could be a blockbuster deal for them at some point in the summer, in the spring, at a time. We could see that this Japanese kid, 7-2 in June.
He's not a kid.
Yeah,
he's
35. Right. I mean, I'm trying to think of Jackson Holliday could roll into form. Rutschman could come back and be the guy that he better come back and be the guy that he better.
I mean,
right?
That's kind of top of the list for me.
But Basayo might come up and be the guy that Wally pips him a year and a half. I don't know how this works out. It's baseball, right? But I do know pitching's important, and I know in the end of the day, we're going to wind up talking about pitching and them either having enough, not having enough, or even the perception that they don't have enough, which kind of ate them up last year after the injuries. I mean, there was a perception that they couldn't win in October, and they couldn't.
Well, but it wasn't because of the pitching. They couldn't hit. I mean, they pitched fine in those two games. But, yeah, I mean, it obviously begins with the pitching. And I mentioned Adley Rutschman. That's, for me, that's the prerequisite. He's got to look like Adley Rutschman again. The guy was for 2 calendar years, and then he wasn't for 3 months, which I think he was hurt. I asked him point blank after the Game 2 loss, season-ending loss to Kansas City, and, you know, didn't want to go there. But you read the tea leaves, you see when he got hit on the hand, all that. So making that assumption, because it's all we can go off of at this point in time, you hope he bounces back, he's healthy, better shape, whatever might have been bothering him, all that, right? So that's first. But, yeah, when you lose Corbin Burnes, when Kyle Bradish, best-case scenario, is back in July, let's say, might not pitch at all this year, who knows? You certainly can't count on that, but you're looking at the top of the rotation. Okay, Zach Eflin, good trade deadline addition, pitched well, he's under contract for another year, we talked about that, feel good about him. You know, he's 30, wrong side of 30. I mean, he's not old, but he's not young either.
And not inexpensive. I mean, given the, where we were, the difference between old ownership and new ownership.
But the point is, he's as close as a sure thing as you would get. I mean, he has a little bit of an injury history that goes back to Philadelphia, so I think it's important to be mindful of that. But, I mean, let's face it. I say this to you all the time.
You better make 30 starts.
Everyone is durable until they're not anymore in any sport.
Well, if they're going to win a world, if they're going to compete this year, I mean, he's got to be 28 to 33 starts, and he's got to be healthy.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, very difficult.
Because you don't think you're going to get that out of Rodriguez, because that's where you're about to go.
Well, I don't know if you say you don't think, but until you see it, there's going to be some doubt, right? I mean, I don't think there's any reason to think that he's just going to be hurt, but until you see
him. But I don't have him penciled in for 30 starts either.
Right. I mean, well, you have him penciled in, but look, everything's in pencil when you're talking about pitching. I mean, let's call.
Well, this is where you start saying who's our sixth, seventh, eighth guy. Well, who's the guy we're going
to
deal with?
And look, that's what's interesting to me. And we've talked about this from a pitching depth standpoint. When you start talking about guys that you project to be number four, number five types, they've got a decent stable of guys like that at this point in time. I mean, who knows what's going to happen with Trevor Rogers? He's been in their organization now to see if they can, quote, fix him. I mean, that was always the idea to some extent when they acquired him from Miami. Cade Povich pitched well down the stretch. He's not even in their projected starting five to begin the season, but he pitched well. So
well,
there's
the Trevor Rogers
option.
Thing, you look at what they gave up for him, and it's a placeholder in a different place where we always say they need more pitching, they need more pitching. Well, they gave up some depth and position player depth for guys that, you know, we can sit here and talk all day about a second baseman and whether that's the right thing to do. But if they get 40, 50, 60 innings at a four clip out of him, 4.5 clip out of him, we evaluate that a little differently. And that's not asking a lot.
No.
That's asking for him to be participatory. And I saw the Danny Colom thing, that the arms have changed in this bullpen and the arms have changed in the rotation.
Sure.
From where all that hope was last March to where it is right now, the organization has done a transplant with pitching in order to be competitive this year and have gone all in on these one-year deals.
Yeah, no question. I mean, we've talked about it. I mean, go look at their payroll. It's middle of the pack in Major League Baseball now, which was not the case even.
What is it? Where are they?
I mean, they're
140s?
I mean, it depends on which source you want to look at. Cots Baseball Contracts, which is pretty reliable, you know, across baseball. I think they've had them 150, something like that. I mean, it's not too far off from where it peaked in the Dan Duquette era. So, which, fully acknowledging, that was almost a decade ago at this point. But it speaks to they've spent money. Now, I'm not saying that they've spent it in a way that I would
have. On pitching.
And
they saved some money on position by not signing Santander, right?
Sure.
So, and at some point, that money in position is all going to go to these kids that are going to hit arbitration.
Hopefully.
I
mean, it already has started.
Well, Gunnar
right?
Henderson is going to take a major move soon.
Oh, sure.
Right? And it's going to be substantial to add whatever your 150 becomes a 170 real quick.
Right. Well, but even the last couple of years, I mean, Santander was getting raises. Cedric Mullins, look at what he's making at this point in time. So they were always going to get more expensive. You know, by the way, Cots has them, as we speak right now, right around $160 million. Now, I'm hoping that's not the end-all, be-all ceiling for what David
Yankees
Rubenstein.
Yankees 284, Blue Jays 243, Red Sox 171.
And the Rays are
Rays
at 80 million, right?
So the Nationals are spending $108 this year.
So it's climbed, and it's climbed substantially. And, I'm not patting them on the back for that. I'm just trying to speak where we are in terms of.
Phillies are spending $288. The Braves are $216. The Twins are $149. Cubs 191. Cardinals are spending they're outspending the Cardinals this year.
Which the Cardinals have kind of, you know, they've dipped and they've struggled the last couple of years. And you know, I've used the Cardinals as a long-term.
Well, that's why I was looking for them.
Right. Yeah. And they fluctuated, right? I mean, some years they've been as high as maybe eighth or ninth over the last 20 years and some.
Well, the Brewers are telling their fans they're trying to win and they gave Corbin Burns away and their payroll's $108 million.
And they were in the playoffs last year. So
Their fan base isn't like mad at them for not getting. They have become conditioned to be middle class.
Upper lower class.
Right,
maybe,
we're all trying to figure out where the Orioles want to position themselves.
Yeah, I still think a lot of that's unknown. You know, what's going to happen with Mass and what's going to happen in a general sense with Major League Baseball local TV rights?
What's going to happen with people like me if I'm going to give them money or not?
Sure.
Are they going to get me back?
Course.
Are they going to start getting $600,000, $800,000 a year from me or not? I don't know.
Of course.
If it, you know,
So I mean, these are questions that we're not going to answer today, but we look at the state of the pitching staff. Does it have the number one Corbin Burns ace? No, it doesn't. Going into the season 2 years ago, Kyle Bradish wasn't perceived to be Kyle Bradish yet, and he finished fourth in Cy Young voting that year. Can Grayson Rodriguez make that kind of jump this year? If he stays healthy, I think he's got a chance to.
Well, we talk a lot about the 14 Orioles, and we talk about Wei and Chen. Now, Tillman pitched a little bit more like a one for a minute or two.
I mean, they never
they didn't have a bunch of threes. I mean, twos and threes and fours.
Exactly. And that's where I look at where they are from a rotation standpoint. Look, I'd still love to see a move made for Dylan Cease or Luis Castillo or someone like that, whether it's in the next 3 days, whether it's in the next 2 weeks, or whether it's in June, right?
Well, and this is where the intrigue, I'll bring you into that a little bit, because they signed the outfielder thinking that there might be some curse. There's a little bit of positioning to think like they still want to make a splash.
We know that they obviously have the farm system, the capability of doing that, the financial flexibility they should have to do that. Again, I don't think they're
capped. Well, Dylan Cease isn't about money. That's about talent.
You're talking about a guy that's in the final year of, you know, you'd be having 1 year of control like Corbin Burns. Think about what you gave up for Corbin Burns. You know, would you even have to give up Heston Kerstad? And look, let me be clear, and you could check this out. Greater length at BaltimorePositive.com. Ramon Laureano, who hits left-handed pitching, is a good fielder, great, one of the best throwing arms in baseball. Probably not a center fielder anymore, but certainly a guy that you could put in left or right and feel good about when you're going up against left-handed starters. You kind of look at the condition of the Orioles outfield right now. You know, Tyler O'Neill was signed to essentially replace Santander. We know that. Crushes left-handed pitching. Look at his splits against right-handers the last few years. Not terrible, but also, you know, if you're facing a really tough right-hander,
give him that off.
Might be a day to give him the night off.
Facing Corbin Burns.
I mean, we know Cedric Mullins. As much as I credit him for rebounding from a brutal start last year, two of the last 3 years, he's basically been unplayable against left-handed pitching. So, you know, Colton Cowser, the book's still out about him in terms of facing left-handers. You know, I think he had a 660 OPS against lefties last year. It's not great, but better than Mullins.
But I think with some of the guys like him, he's got a lot of play.
And that's the thing. You
and I argued Harold Baines. He went from lefty to righty. But you have to give him the bats.
Right. You've got to see what it looks like. And that's where, to me, that's where I'm not so inclined to look at Ramon Laureano and say, oh, are they going to trade Heston Kerstad? I see a path because of what I just said, because you have so many guys that are kind of platoon, at least questionable, that there should be a path for Heston Kerstad to get legitimate at-bats. And look, I'm not saying that means 600, no questions
asked. But
you don't
love him with a glove either.
You know, I don't think he's as bad with a glove as, like, I don't think he's Mark Trumbo out there. Let me put it that way. I think if you give him more opportunities out there at the major league level. I mean, keep in mind, this guy's had very limited opportunities, and a lot of that's been because of health. Unfortunately, the best stretch of time he's had in the major leagues was right until he got beamed in the head by the Yankees in mid-July, and that derailed the rest of his season. So I think he's someone that you signed Tyler O'Neill. I'm not saying you just let Santander go and you hand 650 plate appearances to Kerstad, but I think because of how O'Neill profiles, as a guy who has an injury history, a guy that you're going to get some days off here and there, certainly, because you're going to platoon Cedric Mullins, and that opens up left field. You know,
we talk so much about Mullins not being here. He's still here.
He's still here. And look, if there's a trade to be made for a pitcher, if they want Cedric Mullins, and that's...
Well, there's a salary issue now with him, right?
I mean, it is, to a point, but I think some of it is also...
Well, half the organizations don't want to pay anybody. We've already been to that, right?
Yeah. I mean...
You want to take on salary, you don't want to take it on for Cedric Mullins
right now. It's amazing. I was looking at something the other day. I mean, as bad as the Orioles have been, and as woeful as management and ownership has been for the better part of three, going on four decades, I look at I saw some factoids about the Pirates. I think I read that still the biggest free agent contract they've given to an outside free agent, I think, is $17 million. Like, it's insane. It's absurd.
Well, the Skeens thing is going to test them.
And it's a shame because as Ravens-Steelers rivalry aside, I mean, I think there's qualities to that city that aren't completely foreign to Baltimore in terms of
bad baseball.
Well, I was talking more in terms of a fan base that would support better baseball, but yeah, I think with the Orioles,
Clemente played there. You know,
I go back to what you kind of said at the beginning. As much as there are questions about pitching, and I get that, you know, bullpen, I like on paper much better than it was at this time a year ago. But acknowledging Felix Bautista, how quickly, how soon is he going to look like Felix Bautista? Or is it going to take some time? Doesn't mean he's going to be unusable or bad or anything like that, but is he going to be the 2023 version, pre-injury version? Question there, but you know, you've signed Kittredge. You have Sir Anthony Dominguez. You have Gregory Soto, who I think is an interesting wild card for the bullpen. The point is, I think there's upside in that bullpen that it can be better. Would I have brought back Danny Coulomb? Probably, but at the same time, he's someone who had elbow issues, had elbow surgery in June, came back. The results were okay. Velocity was down about 2.5 miles per hour on his fastball. I'm guessing the reason why they didn't want to commit $4 million to him is not because they're cheap. I think they really have their doubts whether he's going to be healthy and effective. So, you know, they pivot. They go in a different direction. Did the same thing with Jacob Webb, elbow issues over the
last
summer.
Well, you also have to figure out the lefty thing. And the lefty-righty thing, the game has changed in regard to how many batters you're going to face. And you mentioned Kerstad and Colton Cowser on platooning or not. I think the last thing you want to do is take a 24, 25-year-old guy who's been a lottery pick and start down that pathway being a platoon player.
Sure, and I think – but you want to have some balance in that regard. I mean, look at some of the toughest left-handed pitching that's in the AL East. You know, when you're talking about one of these studs, you know, you're talking about Max Fried or Crochet. Like, think about the guys that are in this division now. Is that the night that – you might say, well, you know, Mullins isn't going to play against lefties that much, I don't think, period. I think the only time he's going to see at-bats against left-handed pitching, I'm guessing, is when it's a lefty reliever in the fifth or sixth inning, you know, where you're not going to pull him because you want his defense, but I think you're rarely going to see him start against lefties. But when it's one of the tough lefties, that might be the night to say, hey, let's start Laureano. We're going to start O'Neill, obviously, and, you know, you kind of
– Well, you build your lineup to play righty-lefty. You build your lineup to say we want to have the guys that hit lefties well, we want them in there.
But I'm in agreement with you. You certainly don't want to be in a position where these guys are just playing straight platoons. Because
if I'm in June and Cowser's hitting 180 against then I got to make a move.
Exactly. And like I said, he got better in the same way that – if you recall Gunnar Henderson a couple years ago, there were a lot of questions about
Cowser
him
was the best
lefties.
Player on the team in April, and then he had that.
He was all, you know, even the entire body of work, he was still one of the best players on the team when you look at his total value. Now, is it as consistent as you'd like it to be? No, but when he's at his best, he's arguably the best player on the team, like you said. When he's at his worst, he still defends really well. He still can give you tools that are useful to helping win baseball games. So, but I want to go back to something you mentioned because you talked about Jackson Holliday. You made mention, you know, you talked about.
I'm going to sit down because I'm getting old. I got Stan Stock posters here. Keep going. That's fine.
I want to go back to as much as I'll be the first to say that this offseason has been underwhelming relative to hope and optimism with a new owner and new ownership and not knowing where payroll is ultimately going to go, even if, you know, they're spending more. But it hasn't been done in a sexy way. I think we'd all agree with that, right? So, but I think what I try to remind you or anyone I'm talking to about the Orioles is there's still a lot to like about this roster. When you look at this core group of young position players, I mean, you think about where Gunnar Henderson was 2 years ago at this time, and what has he done since then? Well, he won Rookie of the Year, and he was arguably MVP of the league in the first 3 months of last season. I mean, he's that kind of player. Adley Rutschman, assuming he bounces back, again, That needs to happen, you know, because I think that has a trickle-down effect on the pitching and everything. He's got to be right. But when you look at
that is their biggest question.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a
way. And whether the starting pitching is going to look like for number fours every night.
I think what's interesting about the question for Rutschman is it a question for them internally? Or were they just being weird about it and he didn't want to admit he had an injury. They didn't want to admit he had an injury, but he has, you know, whether it was rehab, whether it was a little surgery,
what
whatever.
What is that? Because
teams are just like that now. It's just weird. Everyone's so secretive. And we've seen it in football for years.
For what benefit? I mean, if the guy's hurt, he's hurt.
Because
they
can
hurt.
Do it. But I think they talk themselves into it being that they don't want to make it sound like they're making an excuse for someone. And then they'll get into, well, privacy and HIPAA and all that. But it's just like, come on, guys. This doesn't have to be this way. Anyway. Internally, if they're confident that there was some kind of physical issue that caused that, then I'm guessing they're not worried. If it wasn't, and it was a little more of a, what the heck's going on here? Then, yeah, I think internally that has to be a big question because he's
now,
too,
would
he's
that
too
be
important.
The issue of them signing a backup catcher?
No. No, I mean, I think that was more a case of wanting to upgrade from James McCann. I mean, as much as McCann is a gamer, I mean, he didn't really hit, right?
Taylor Teagarden, baby.
Defensive. Come on. Wasn't great defensively. So I think, you know, with Gary Sanchez coming in, I mean, guy has a lot of pop. You know, he's another guy that, you know, again, going up against a lefty starter, might be the day that Rutschman DHs and Gary Sanchez is behind
well,
the
there's
plate.
Also the part where if Rutschman is the worst player in Major League Baseball as he spent 4 months last
well,
year.
And
like, I don't know. I mean, you know.
I mean, I hope it's
May
not.
28th, he's hitting a .130. You know.
I mean, I don't.
That would be a code red around here.
Sure,
I mean, I felt like most of last summer was a code red.
Sure.
Honestly.
I mean, how many times were we sitting there talking the morning after games where I was just saying, look, this isn't being talked about enough. He's really struggled. And, you know, as reporters there covering the team every day, we were asking about it. But, you know, it's not like Brandon Hyde's just going to say, oh, he stinks. Or Michael Issa is going to say, oh, he stinks. Or Rutschman's going to come right out and say, oh, I'm playing hurt. Like, what do you expect? Like, you know, like everyone was.
But the last day of the season or during the offseason.
I know.
No, it's an easy enough thing to say.
Sure, and that's why.
Adley was battling a hand thing.
And that's why.
That's it.
Right, and that's why we asked about it, and that's why. I'm still waiting to see if it will come out the first week of, you know, when pitchers and catchers report next week, and you know we're talking about it then. But getting back to the young guys, the unproven guys, the Jackson Holidays, knowing what Gunnar did, going from his cup of coffee late in 22 to what he did in 23 to what he's become at this point. And my question for Gunnar, is there even another level
he
for
might get
him?
Better, yeah.
I mean, we've said that about Lamar Jackson the last 5 years, and he's just continued to get better, right? So some guys are just like that. But Colton Kowser, at this time a year ago, we didn't know if he was going to make the roster, right? I mean, he had a disastrous start to his Major League career.
So did Jackson Holiday.
He didn't hit at all. Same with Jackson Holiday. But
Jackson Holiday's right there right now, too.
I mean, right,
he's another guy. If they bring him in and he's hitting a .190 in May, I don't know.
He's 21. I think.
Well, he was in over his head last year.
He was in the first month of the season, no question about it. Did he look better when he came back? Yeah. Did he still struggle? Sure. But it wasn't so bad where it's like, oh,
well, that was
unplayable.
Just a huge adjustment to Major League pitching.
It's age 20 season. I mean, think about how many, even some of the best Major Leaguers, 20 years old,
what
they're
were
typically
they doing
in
when
double
they were
20, A,
right?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the best, even, you know, Cal Ripken, who was called up, what, he was had just turned 21, I guess, when he was called up in 1981. I mean, so you think about that. Not that that gives him a complete pass for just doing nothing if he's in the major league lineup and not performing, but you do have to remember that he's really young. And think about how some of these other guys have grown. Look what Kowser did, who's a few years older, from his rookie year to what he did last year, second in rookie of the year.
Well, I don't project it that way, and you don't project it that way. The sport projects Jackson Holiday that way.
Sure.
This
sure.
isn't you and me.
I mean, yeah.
This is everybody
saying.
This isn't
saying, the Orioles hyping up some.
This guy's going to be, yeah. has potential to yeah. be better than Henderson.
Yeah.
Like, literally.
Exactly. I mean, the upside is for him to be that kind of player. Sure.
I don't think Kowser's going to be better than Henderson, but Westberg might be. I'm not sure he's done.
But that's the thing. Right? But that's my thing here. When you look at some of these guys and how they grew from year one to year two, I mean, Rutschman was kind of Rutschman. After his first month,
well, they
right?
got six but guys to get to 30 home
but
runs,
he was
right?
older. You know, Gunnar Henderson from 21 to age 22 to 23. I mean, look at the leaps and bounds of improvement that he's made. Jordan Westberg, he was kind of a league average player as a rookie. You know, he was okay. Nothing to be discouraged about, but certainly wasn't projecting him to be an all-star. Yeah. And now it's like, okay, that was even with him getting hurt. Now he's healthy and see what he looks like this year. So my point with all of this, and it's not to say that they're all going to become – perennial all-stars and that they're going to be, you know, it's like the Orioles are the big red machine, but there's a lot to like, and even with this lineup, even without Santander, there's still a lot to like with this lineup. Do I have questions about the upside of the starting rotation? Absolutely I do, and that's why, to me, even if you like how the pitching is going come June and July, you got to be looking and saying, man, is there a move to be made here? You know,
well, there will be, right?
You would hope
so. I mean,
so.
That would be the confidence level.
You would hope so, yeah.
Look at Mike Elias walked in here right now. I don't sweat him. I mean, I think they've done what they could do in the offseason short of pulling the trigger on giving a pitcher $200 million.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's a yes or no. And if it's no, what are you going to do? And if you're pitching me on, well, we're going to have established major league pitchers, maybe they're 41 years old, but we're going to buy these pitchers for 1 year, and they're not broken down, and they didn't have bad years last year. And, you know, it feels like there's a reliability of Kittredge, Eflin, Clearly Morton at 41, if they feel like they're really going to get 134 decent innings out of him this year, then that becomes worth the money more than giving Corbin Burns 230 and maybe suffering an injury or something catastrophic, and then holding out hope that there will be a deal to be made if they're good enough.
Sure, sure. And if there's a need. I mean, I
the old Orioles didn't have the artillery to do that. That's a difference,
sure,
right?
Sure. And we saw this at the trade deadline last year. Even if you didn't like every move they made, and certainly I didn't love every move that they made, they took on salary. I mean, not just Eflin. I mean, like some of the other moves they made, they took on salary.
But in 2014 or 15, for them to make a Max Scherzer kind of deal, they just didn't have players. What, are you going
to
trade Machado? He was in the team.
I mean,
they didn't have anybody.
What, in 14?
Dylan Bundy? What was it, you know?
Well, that was the thing. In 14, they had the chance. If you recall, John Lester was being dangled.
I remember
and
that.
And what, I think it was Hunter Harvey at the time. I think Bundy had already had Tommy John surgery, so he wasn't an option. So they could have done it, and they decided to deal Eduardo Rodriguez for Andrew Miller, who pitched his butt off for the Orioles.
Well, there was also a point of money, too. Once Andrew Miller got paid, he left. They weren't going to pay anybody back then. So the rental thing for pitching?
Other than Chris Davis.
what was it? Grow the arms, buy the bats. Now it's grow the bats and buy the arms.
And I think what's interesting about what is interesting about the pitching, beyond the age of Charlie Morton and Sagano, is if you look at those two guys and also look at Zach Eflin, who obviously is already part of the staff but arrived last August, look at their walk rates. I mean, these are control pitchers. These are not guys that are going to issue free passes. You know, Morton still averaged a strikeout per inning last year. Sagano, my biggest question with him, because he's coming from pitching in Japan, which, you know, generally
my
the
biggest
talent,
question him is everything.
Well, no, but I just mean, like, I think how he profiles in terms of throwing strikes, he doesn't walk people, all of that I like. Is he going to miss enough bats? And I don't mean, is he going to strike a bunch of people? But if you don't strike anyone out ever, it's really difficult to pitch and be effective in this day and age in Major League Baseball like that. And
you got to play defense behind a guy.
You know,
like
these are control-minded pitchers. You know, they don't walk many people. I mean, they're going to have to play defense. I mean, there's no question. And I'm hoping
they went through a period where they kicked the ball around last year.
Things
got bad.
They did,
and they didn't for a year and a half. And it was really when we started talking about it, it was really weirdly out of character.
I mean, especially with Gunner. I mean, who had played a really good shortstop. And look, I still think that's more weird blip
hiccup-y,
than something to be concerned about or alarmed about long term. You know, I think Jackson Holliday having another year under his belt at second base, there's no reason to think he can't be a good second baseman. And I think Jordan Westberg, you know, I guess his faux pas against, you know, on the Bobby Witt play in the playoffs aside, plays really good defense. So, you know, I think there's still so much to like about this team. Am I sitting here and trying to, you know, trying to say they're going to be a 105-win juggernaut? No, I'm not going to Buffalo you about that. I mean, I certainly have my questions about the pitching, but I don't think the cupboard is completely bare there. I think there's depth, but the question is upside on the pitching side. But if you and you made the comparison. I mean, you brought it up, not me. 2014 team. They didn't have a great rotation in terms of all this great upside, but they pitched well. Their bullpen was outstanding. That team defended really well. And, you know, you had Nelson Cruz and Adam Jones and not so much Machado that year, if you recall.
Well, they didn't hit the home runs in the end, but they were capable
of
hitting.
Right. And I think, you know, as much as, yes, in a perfect world, you'd still have Corbin Burns as your ace. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, that is not the only path to being a really good team. And I'll remind you, the Texas – who was the Dodgers' ace? Not right now on paper, but as their rotation was duct taped together – last October, who was the Dodgers' ace? Who was the Rangers' ace the year before that? It was Nathan Eovaldi. You know, I mean,
well, for one year this year without Burns, Burns would have been whatever, $35 million, whatever that number is. That pretty much is the Japanese guy, Sagano, and to some degree Charlie Morton or Eflin or whatever, is to say, do you want one Corbin Burns? Now there's another $150 million on the app back,
and there's
that.
Other pitchers you could plug in there
as well. But you know. How do you want to play this? Yeah. And, you know, part of the Corbin Burns thing is I'll buy that he wanted to pitch in Phoenix. Yeah. I'll buy that, like, he just didn't want to be here.
I definitely think there was legs to the West Coast thing.
To the thing of, like, if they gave him 230, if you gave him 250, would he even be happy here? Would that you're going to outbid him? If you didn't want to be here, that's one thing.
Yeah.
If you didn't believe in the contract or the money, that's another thing. And if you felt like, well, we're still going to spend $35 million on pitching this year in that way. We're just going to get two guys.
Yeah.
you know, that don't cost us down the line.
You know, you're not tied into long-term
this
money.
This is buying a used car versus a new car, dude. You know, like literally.
It is.
They both get you there.
And
they both drive.
And hopefully you didn't buy two lemons, right?
Right. I mean, I hope you didn't. We're going to see.
But all of that being said, I think you look at, you look at Vegas and the sports books, win-loss totals. Orioles are right there, second or third in the American League. Now, that might say way more about the overall state of the American League, more so than the Orioles. But you see that. You see some of these different projection systems, Pagoda and all these, you know, Zips and all these different projection systems that for years hated the Orioles. I mean, even going back to the Buck and Dan Duquette era, that always undersold them, and they would tend to exceed expectations in that way. You know, all of those analytics models and everything still like this team. Now, is it, again, is
it as great as it could have been? One in October. You know what I mean? That's
sure.
Right.
No,
And to your point, they have to get to October.
But you have to get there.
If they don't get to October, this would really be something.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they're 89.5, you know, Vegas number. They better be a playoff team. That's what I would say. This pitching better hold up. This better have been a good idea.
The pitching, and I mean, they need to be healthier than they were last year. I mean, the injuries killed them in the second half of the season. I mean, there's no question about that. And I'm not excusing everything that happened, but I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Losing Grayson Rodriguez hurt, and you lost Eflin for what, 2 weeks, and Burns was just plain bad in August, right? I mean, that was still something that was just kind of weird, even in hindsight, looking back at it. But you lost Jordan Westberg, and you know, even though Mateo isn't a middle of the order hitter, he's still important depth for you. And they, you know, they lost him and Rutschman. What the heck was going on with him? I mean, you add all those things up, it's less and less surprising in hindsight to look back and
you get 10,000 empty seats in the upper deck.
Well,
nobody wants to go. But nobody thinks you can win.
Right. And I mean, right? I mean, you were the guy that was more optimistic than I was in mid September. I mean, I was kind of throwing dirt on him at that point because I just didn't believe.
I thought they'd hit the ball.
Well, sure. And
I thought they'd score 8 runs in one of these games and win.
Let me be clear. I wasn't saying
that. And keep playing. I didn't think they were going to win the World Series.
I wasn't saying that to pat myself on the back. It was more so that it just trended in the wrong direction for a long time.
Yeah.
And it just felt like.
And that's why coming back without Corbin Burns doesn't feel warm and fuzzy.
It doesn't. But you know what you hope to, it ends up being warm and fuzzy? You hope these young guys learn from that. I mean, think about it. So many of these guys just excelled through the minor leagues. You know, they just burned through the minor leagues. I mean, you look at someone like Gunnar and Jackson Holliday and all these guys. You know, a lot of these guys, this was their first real experience with failure. So how do you handle that? You know, do you kind of – you kind of turtle up, and you know, if it happens again in June, then you tailspin again, or do you say, "Hey,
well,
we're going
to be fine"? It was tough for Jackson Holliday to go down and come back, even for a kid.
Sure,
Luke Jones is here. We are at Cooper's North. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have the lucky Magic 8-Ball here. It's the end of a Cup of Super Bowl week. We are hanging out. I think I'm going to wrap things up because I'll get together with you and we'll get the football and like all that other stuff. But there's plenty on the baseball side with these other pitchers.
We didn't even get to the orange uniforms. Which we said we were going to talk
about. 5 minutes on the orange uniform. Let's go. Let's go. What do you want to say?
You
want me to vomit now or later?
I will say this much. I like them more than the City Canucks at the very least. But you know me, man. I'm a purist when it comes to baseball uniforms.
Well, if they're going to put them on, put the real throwbacks on and wear the old logo and have it be a throwback thing. Don't have it be a modern version of.
You know what spoiled this, though, right?
The Savannah Bananas spoiled this.
No, no. When they released their promotions, their giveaway schedule. They had a Grayson Rodriguez bobblehead,
yeah,
and
it was
orange. People noticed, hey, he's got orange pants. Look, if they only wear it.
You think they're going to wear white top and orange pants or black
top?
No, I think all orange or nothing.
Either all orange or orange with the white like they have. Yeah, they'll keep that one as a.
Right.
But I think the all orange will be their alternate. Chris Pyka has. I have to credit him for this because he's verbalized this, I know, when we've talked about this or even probably been on the radio. My perfect alternate uniform for the Orioles would be, and putting aside, I like the orange jersey. It's fine. You know, like I'm fine with that. He said for years that you should do a Sunday home game 1966 uniforms. You know, the classic script, the black letters on the nameplate, you know, the old cartoon bird cap, all that would be a perfect, you know, kind of an off-white.
White, yeah.
Yeah,
a little dusty white is what I call it.
I mean, that would be the perfect Sunday afternoon home game alternate uniform. That would be, but that's too. There you go. But but that's too boring for today. Today's
something magic happened.
You know, today's day and age is you got to make the
Every
uniforms uglier and uglier.
Luke is here. We're making the you done with it?
Yeah,
until they wear them, and we're going to throw up again, and you know,
it's like I said, it's the day and age that we're living in. These uniforms have to look.
You kids don't buy those orange pants, whatever you do.
I'm very much a keep the pants white or gray. You know, or you know, if you've got your powder blue that some teams wear, otherwise right. Don't mess with the pants.
Go eat some gumbo.
That sounds great.
We're Coopers North. I am Nestor. It is all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. Our friends at Wise Markets also with us. I'm going to do one more segment around here. I got Greg and I got Chris here. We're going to talk about Towson, the Towson Torch, Towson Transfers. Going to talk a little bit about the documentary, which features Luke as well. He was younger then. I've aged him. Dramatically.
Man, I must really be looking old because that's all you keep
really
saying.
You look young
to me.
Today. You're like shaved up and stuff. You don't.
I hadn't shaved all week.
I hadn't either, man. When you and I don't shave,
you know,
we're looking like two old farts this yelling on the radio.
This month, from the time the Ravens end till baseball season, this is when I catch my breath.
I only see Luke three times a year now, so I have to shave on days we get together, smell nice, and all that. We're at Coopers North. It is a cup of Super Bowl. It is part of our extended Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're doing this all for the Maryland Food Bank. We have tons of bags back here. I've had lots of folks about food insecurity this week and a charity. Today we've had the Greater Chesapeake Foundation out. I've got all sorts of cards here. We had a blind industry. Jessica Normanton was here from BISM. Also, we talked about the Horizon Day Camp, which is also powered up by the Greater Chesapeake Foundation. I had Reed's Rescue on. I had a beautiful young lady on today who rescues senior dogs. And it's R-E-E-D, not like Andy Reed, like Ed Reed. And she told me, my dog's name was Reed because my husband's a Ravens fan. Nice. And so, and she never heard from Glenn Eunice or Ed, the real Ed Reed. So I think the real Ed Reed, if I'm going to pressure anybody, this is perfect. Older, wiser, and still stealing hearts, just like Ed Reed.
Yeah.
Right? Just like Ed Reed, right? So I want to pressure Ed Reed into doing something nice for the Reed's Rescue. There's my shout-out to you, Glenn Eunice. So do something nice for the folks at Reed's Rescue who rescue senior dog. So
very
it's a good
cool.
week for all that, right?
Very cool. Absolutely.
Right. I'm a senior dog. I appreciate you and Chris rescuing me around here, as well as Greg. So if you hate the documentary, I'm going to have the guy on. It's his fault. I don't have anything to do with it.
No pressure.
If you love the documentary, it's because I've lived a charmed life. I'm Nestor. We're back from Cooper's. I'm going to live a charmed life with some gumbo and some extra rice. Back for more right after this.